Welcome to the Tuesday Sports Show.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to the URN Sport on this Tuesday evening. We will be discussing over the next hour all the sports news from the past week and previewing what's to come over the next 7 days.
Murray wins! Murray wins it all! This is going to be a tough break. Why? Because we've got the next series! Barrett control this, and the cup is his.
Is URN Sport.
Good evening and welcome to this tonight's Tuesday Sports Show. I am Jeremy Dunn. I am your host here for tonight's hour of all sports news there is. And I'm joined here in the studio by Jamie Keane, Joe Tanner and Jimmy Morehouse. So first, we're going to kick things off by looking at tennis, and the big story that's going on at the moment, of course, is that the French Open is underway. We are midway through clay season down there at Roland Garros, and Andy Murray is the main one that we are all hoping for, and he is now through into the last eight with his win over Kieran Chaknov. It's a fantastic display from Murray that has seen him go through into the last eight. Of course, he was unfortunately defeated finalist in last year's go-round, and he will be looking to become the first Englishman since 1935 to win Roland Garros, which will be great for him. But Jamie, you've got the full rundown on how things are looking down there in France. Do you want to give us the breakthrough of how it's going on?
Yeah, so Andy Murray comfortably beat the Russian Kachanikov 6-3, 6-4, 6-4. Four in the fourth round, and he'll face Keenish Curry tomorrow in the last day. Notably, all men's quarterfinals will be played tomorrow due to a rain delay today. In the other games, Djokovic has beaten Albert Ramos again in straight sets 7-6, 6-1, 6-3. Stan Wawrinka has beaten the 15th seed Gael Monfils. Nishikori beat Verdasco in my opinion the most entertaining game of the day, 0-6, 6-6, 6-4, 6-4 and 6-love. Nadal has beaten the Spanish Bautista in straight sets. Raonic is out the Canadian by Carreño 4-6, 7-6, 6-7, 6-4 and 8-6 in the final set, a cracking game there. And Cilic and Dominic Thiem are also through. Going on to the women's, the biggest shock of the day was the 30th seed Bishinsky has knocked out Venus Williams 5-7, 6-2, 6-1. Miladinovic has beaten Muguruza as well. Muguruza, the 4th seed, sorry, 6-1, 3-6, 6-3. Ostapenko, who was unseeded, has beaten Sam Stauzer 2-6, 6-2, 6-4. Wozniacki has beaten the 8th seed Kuznetsova in 3 sets. Pliskova threw past Veronica Cepeda-Roig, and Svitolina Garcia and Halep are both through. The final, then today, the first quarterfinals of the women's draw were played, but unfortunately rain stopped play. So far in those games, Miladinovic against Bishinsky is 4-6 and then 1-1, and then Ostapenko against Wozniacki is 4-6, 5-2. In the doubles, Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez are out, and they were the highest seeds left in the tournament. They're out in the quarterfinal, and for all Nottingham-based tennis fans, Daniel Evans and Johanna Konta, who are unfortunately both out of the French Open, they will be playing in the Nottingham Aegon Open later on in 3 days' time, actually.
So there we are, full roundup on all the events that have been going on. There's a couple of big stories there, obviously, of course, Jamie Murray getting knocked out, unfortunately, early on for him, which is probably very disappointing for him, as I believe he's still the number one ranked doubles player in the world. But we're going to then flick across to the other world number one ranked player. That is, of course, his brother, who was able to come through 6-3, 6-4, 6-4 to claim his 650th tour level victory in 2 hours, 4 minutes. Fine work from him. Joe, just so as we're looking at this, we've talked about the fact that he was an unfortunate defeated finalist. Can he go all the way to the final, at least? Let's not get ahead of ourselves first, but final, do you reckon?
I really do hope so, Jeremy. I mean, I think in this Open, he's really showing signs of his 2016 and 2015 form here, which he failed to really replicate and really continue, especially in the early part of 2017. You know, this straight sets victory against Kachanov, as well as that early victory in the early rounds against Juan Martín Del Potro as well, which, don't forget, was absolutely brilliant. He's been helped by some, you know, big names going out of the tournament. Of course, Joe Wilfried Tsonga went out quite early in the French Open, but, you know, nonetheless, Nadal and sorry, not Nadal. Yeah, Nadal and Djokovic look set to possibly meet each other in the semi-finals, which looks quite good in a way, because he would avoid meeting both of those two on the way to the final, and hopefully only really meet them in the final, which looks like he could possibly get there. I mean, you know, in the Australian Open, just to compare, at the start of the year in January, he went out, I think it was the fourth or fifth round,
really early on,
to Raonic, and you know, such a disappointment really after what was such a brilliant 2016 performance. You know, you think about Wimbledon and all the kind of successes he had last year. I think with this straight sets victory going into the quarterfinals in good form, building a lot of momentum for that, I think he's got every chance of not only making it to the final but coming out on top in this one.
Yeah, I think this is the time for Murray now. Obviously, if he does win the French Open, he'll be the first Britishman since Fred Perry, who did it in 1935. One thing I think, well, with him winning in, what you say, 2 hours and 4 minutes today, it will help him with the games getting compressed now with the rain. There's been a lot of rain in Paris, particularly today. The games are going to come thick and fast for Andy Murray, so if he gets these early rounds done in quick time, his fitness is going to be at a far better level going into the more crunch matches in the semi-final, and if he does get to the final.
Hi, this is Jeff Selling from Sky Sports, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Thanks very much, Jeff. So you're back here on this Tuesday Sports Show here at URN. We've had a full rundown then on all the events of the tennis, and now we're going to go over to looking at the Champions Trophy that is currently going on at the moment. England are currently in action against New Zealand. Jimmy, you've been keeping an eye on how that's going. Do you want to give us the latest on what's going on over there?
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. It looks very much like it's going to be an England victory against New Zealand. That will take them through to the semi-finals of the Champions Trophy. They got an impressive 310 all out. Joe Root with an impressive 64 in their innings. And New Zealand, they had a strong start. Kane Williamson was doing well on 87 before he's bowled by Mark Wood, caught by Butler. And that since then, really, the wickets have just been falling for New Zealand. They're currently on 196 for 6, needing 115 runs from the last 11 overs. And frankly, that's not going to happen bar some sort of miracle. So I think it's safe to say that England will be going through to the semi-finals after two games in Group A of the Champions Trophy.
Yeah, hugely promising there for England to be going through already so early on in this tournament into the next round of the Champions Trophy. The only other side that we should look at it is that whilst New Zealand are a team that can occasionally cause a bit of trouble, they aren't going to be the toughest test that this England team will be facing throughout the tournament. I mean, when we look down the list as to who are competing, the name that immediately, probably the two names that I would say immediately jump out to me as the obvious dangers would be India and Australia as the two. Australia, of course, are in England's group and at the moment look like they're going to be the favourites to go through with England into the next stage of the tournament. Meanwhile, on the other, in Group B, it's currently India who are sat top, followed by South Africa. So it's the Champions Trophy. It's a bit of an interesting tournament. Sort of, I mean, I know we don't do it, but just sort of as a comparison, it's kind of a bit like, I'd say, the Confederations Cup. It's sort of a prelude, really, towards the World Cup in cricket, which is something that will be coming up. Of course, this summer we have got the Women's World Cup occurring here in England, which will be a fantastic spectacle. But just looking at this Champions Trophy then, guys, as we're looking down at the groups at the moment, we're only a couple of games in, obviously, so we can't cast full judgment yet, but how do you sort of feel this is shaping up? Is it looking sort of a by the books tournament, would you say?
It's looking interesting for England, because obviously New Zealand, they seem to be doing so well today, but Australia and Bangladesh, we know, are no pushovers, and we learnt last week, however, that I think as Owen Morgan said today, that the England side are having this new lease of life, this new confidence, which they haven't really experienced in quite a while, really. I mean, buoyed by that wonderful ODI victory against South Africa last week. The batting totals today haven't been quite as impressive as, you know, that route, I think it was 167, was it, he made? And that Ben Stokes century as well, you know, numerous sixes and great performances, especially in the batting order from the England team. But nonetheless, I mean, yeah, totals like Joe Root 64, and you know, all the you know, Stokes was unlucky on 48 not to reach a half century. It's been a good performance by England, and you know, 310 all out is not too bad. I mean, they'll probably want to improve on it, but nonetheless, a good bowling performance means that they're probably over the line in today's match at least.
Yeah, interesting when we then sort of look ahead a bit more to kind of some of the games that are coming up. I mean, we're I think at the moment looking as though this New Zealand game is pretty much wrapped up and England have got the points then. So looking ahead to some of the games that are then coming up then, England's next match is on the 10th, and that is at Edgbaston against Australia. Now, that is going to be probably the real test that they're going to be facing. I would point out from this group, I mean, Joe is right, though, to identify that Bangladesh are a team that we know can cause a lot of problems. They are no pushovers, so that's certainly safe to say. But Australia, the second-place team in the group currently, and England will be going head-to-head with them on the 10th at Edgbaston. Guys, just sort of as a prelude for that game, if we're looking ahead, you know, are we thinking that that's going to be probably a really critical one for the whole tournament? I mean, obviously we'll be going through England, but then that'll boil down to do we come first or second.
I think it's the group decider for me, definitely. And also with that New Zealand victory, let's not underestimate, because when we met New Zealand in the 2015 World Cup, we got battered by 8 wickets, and I think that's a really big confidence booster for Owen Morgan. Owen Morgan has come out before the New Zealand game, said how important it is. And let's not underestimate it, because all eyes are on Owen Morgan as well. A lot of questions about being raised when he was made captain. So that significant win today, unless there's an upset towards the end against New Zealand, is going to be really important going into the Australia game. But it's the age-old cliche going into the game against Australia. Form does go out the window in this huge game. But going back to what I said at the start, definitely the winner of this game decides the Group A for me.
We've now had a chat then about all the cricket and tennis news that has been going on, and now though we're going to take things to a slightly, unfortunately, less happy topic, and we're going to move on to athletics, specifically the topic of doping within athletics, as it has reared its ugly head once again with two stories that emerged this week. But we're going to focus primarily on the first one, which is that 28 Russian athletes have made a request for competing, and these are amongst those that have been brought within the whole scandal that's been going on for the last couple of weeks. It's a really bad reflection, isn't it, Joe, that the fact, you know, these athletes, they have attempted to get this repealed. They've been asking if they can compete in sort of more low-level sports, we hear, more low-level competitions, and also to basically get back into the sports and compete under potentially more neutral governing bodies. But three of them have had their requests accepted, but that means 25 of them still haven't, and this is sort of still, you know, the dark cloud of doping is still hovering over athletics as a whole.
Yeah, definitely. I think the name, well, the phrase Russian athletics and doping, both phrases have become almost synonymous in recent years. It's been such a debacle away from, you know, the Olympics last year and now this. It's been quite a long and drawn out process. But nonetheless, yeah, it's significant that these, you know, these three athletes have had their cases repealed, and yeah, further 27 are still under review, as the Russia's Athletics Federation remains banned from the international competitions. So Yelena Isabayeva quit her key Russian anti-doping role. The former double Olympic pole vault champion, who's age 34, has been critical of the punishment of Russian athletes over the evidence of state-sponsored doping in the country. Isinbayeva led the supervisory council at Russia's anti-doping agency, or RUSADA, but was viewed by the World Anti-Doping Agency as a barrier to the country's compliance with their code. Russia has until November to meet those criteria, and Isinbayeva says that they are on course to do so. The athlete said, "I am happy that I've achieved my goal. I know that now I need to make way for a new chairman who will complete Rosada's full reinstatement," she was reported as saying by Interfax news agency. WADA president Sir Craig Reedy described Isabayeva's move as a major step forward. He says, "Our compliance review committee has a clear view of what the proper structure of a top-class anti-doping organisation should be. First, the controlling board should have a majority of independent members. Russia has delivered that, and secondly, its chair should be one of the independent members. That is what they have delivered today. If she stays on board, then that is their call to make, but we are heading in the right direction," the official has recently said. I mean, it does seem like a step in the right direction, because you know this former pole vaulter has been critical of Russian athletes and this process, but now that she's been removed from the role, it looks like there can be a major step forward, and it looks like the factor, I mean the debate here is whether this doping is so entrenched in Russian athletics and by extension Russian athletics on the world stage, or whether her removal in this position, Issa Benyeva, will create a more welcoming environment for Russian athletes who don't use doping practices in their competitions. I don't know about your guys' perspectives on this.
Yeah, when I first saw this story, I thought, why not? Why can't they compete as neutrals? But then I looked into it again and thought, well, you know, they're going to hinder other nations' prospective progress in competitions if they do enter just by themselves. And I mean, you could also have possibly some sympathy for the athletes if it's a state-sponsored program. How much say do they have in the drugs that they take? You know, do they even know? It's unfortunate. Actually, the last time I came on this show, I actually spoke about doping within cycling. And the key thing in cycling is sometimes they don't even know that they are taking these drugs. And also they are peer pressured into doing so when they do know about it. So, yeah, you know, it's quite difficult. You know, if it's all about morals at the end of the day. If the Russian athletes that have been banned didn't want to take the drugs and they honestly will never do it again, then, you know, they should be allowed back in for the spirit of the sport. And I think they probably should be allowed at lower levels, you know, even sort of semi-professional level, to allow them to come back into the sport, because that is their job after all. But in terms of going back onto the international stage, maybe not just yet if they're going to be competing for Russia.
Hi, I'm Lauren Herrier, your SU Sports Officer, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Welcome back to this Tuesday Sport Show here on URN. We have covered so far today the tennis, the cricket and athletics. And now we're going to move on to our final story of the week, which is the situation surrounding the current Lions tour. Now, the Lions will be taking off with their first game going on tomorrow in the early hours of tomorrow morning. And it will be held in Auckland, which will be going on. But there appears to be a bit of bad news coming out of the Lions camp array, specifically divisions surrounding their coach, Warren Gatland, who in his press conference earlier on in the week was quite cold, more than usual, towards the press, and was also quite put out by questions surrounding divided loyalties. Now, guys, this is mostly stemming around from a couple of things, namely Gatland's choices before the series began. He left quite a few of the promising members from the England squad that had done very well in the Six Nations out, and also as well as that, he showed a bit more of what people have perceived as favouritism towards some of his own Wales side. Obviously, of course, he is temporary manager of the Lions and his main job is as Wales coach, but he put a lot of the Wales players in, and the main one that a lot of people are still questioning is Sam Warburton, of course, who he has down as the captain for the tour. Warburton, of course, led the tour in their last success down under when they beat Australia, but he's put him in this time, and there's been disgruntlement also coming from the campus the way he plays. Now, the argument about the way he plays seems to mostly be his very defensive outlook towards rugby, and this contradicts a lot with the England team's setup as to how they've been playing so successfully under Eddie Jones, and it's led to some resentment, with Gatland eventually storming out of the press conference shouting at them to let him get on with his job as a manager and let them report the stories once they win, which is typical Warren Gatland, really, putting his ego first above everything. But just then, as we saw looking at that, with the first game then in under 24 hours time, this is a bit worrying to hear that the camp isn't quite united and ready for a big tour.
I mean, it's difficult to make a Lions tour have unity sort of resonating through the squad when you pick from such a massive pool of players, Scotland, Wales and Ireland and England as well. It's just it's difficult to kind of get that team dynamic right. I mean, you are right, Jeremy, to highlight that of course the England team did do so well at the Six Nations, of course winning the winning the trophy overall, the likes of Owen Farrell, George Ford, Jonathan Joseph, you know, such a great pool of talent who seemingly aren't getting the recognition that they deserve for their work. And it's interesting as well, obviously, because Sam Warburton was removed off his captaincy before the Six Nations and yet had such injury worries and complaints before the tournament started as well. And Wales actually did put in quite a poor performance at the Six Nations relative to their usual successes. So it is it is kind of baffling in a way why Warren Gatland hasn't picked more people from the England team, because of course they're coming up against teams from the Southern Hemisphere who we've known have done so well in recent years. I mean, it was all Southern Hemisphere teams in the last four of the last World Cup, of course, and the All Blacks are known for their constant domination at all kind of rugby union major international tournaments, and you know they're coming up against teams of a similar ilk here. So on that basis, Gatland should be picking teams on basis, players on basis of form rather than experience and his relationship with them. Of course, Sam Warburton's got a great relationship with Gatland, but I think it's interesting with the internal politics and with the fact that he hasn't had a great 2017 or 2016, in fact.
I think the whole concept of the British and Irish Lions is difficult. It's a tough one. I think it's a top-down problem. I don't think you should have a coach who has so much experience with one of the national sides to be the coach of the Lions. I think it needs to be an external coach coming in, because that's where we get the issue of he's just constantly going to defend himself, saying, well, I'm going to get more out of Wales players than I would out of English players. We also need to be careful when we're judging players he's picking, because if you look at big shocks, if he's not picking certain players, I know Farrell had other duties, but Farrell wasn't picked for that first game. This is not Owen Farrell under Eddie Jones. This is Owen Farrell under Warren Gatland. That's what we've got to remember. Some of these players aren't going to be at the level they're at when they're playing for their specific national side, which is why I've always sort of struggled to understand the concept of the British and Irish Lions, because it's effectively just a team of superstars who are just glued together, which we've seen in other sports doesn't always work. You need a sort of team chemistry. You can't just have a team of superstars playing with each other, especially when the coach knows some of them far better than others.
I think it was sort of a vicious cycle, you could say, in terms of the job that Gatland's got for himself. As he picks more of these Wales players, then he's going to face a lot more pressure from the media. And if he doesn't keep his cool, as he didn't really when he reacted angrily to the Warren Ball question in a press conference the other day, I think as he starts to struggle and results don't perhaps come as we expect them to, then he's going to put his faith in those Wales players, which he knows so well. And then, of course, by picking those Wales players, then we're going to see more and more questions from the media on perhaps his favouritism towards those from Wales. So I think he's got a really difficult job, and the stress that he's kind of showing in those press conferences, I think, is symptomatic of the pressure that he's certainly under as the boss.
This is URN Sport.